The following is an excerpt from the book Pictures of Christian Heroism, published in 1855. The Nuns of Minsk. For 3 centuries there has been established in Poland a Greek church in connection with the Holy See, and bitter is the hatred with which it has been uniformly regarded by the Russian government. Of late years, more strenuous efforts than ever have been made to oblige or to persuade the Roman Catholics to forsake the true fold and unite themselves to the national establishment of Russia, the Greek schismatics. In some instances, these efforts have unhappily been successful, and about 10 or 12 years since, even 3 bishops apostatized, taking with them a considerable portion of the people. These bishops were immediately rewarded with high honors, and they spared no exertions to ingratiate themselves still further with their imperial master, by bringing over, if possible, the faithful remnant of their late flocks. Shimezko, the apostate bishop of Minsk, especially distinguished himself in this unhallowed labor, and the following narrative may be relied upon as supplying details of the most incredible brutalities of which he was guilty in his endeavor to overcome the constancy of a religious community in his diocese. Chapter 1. Expulsion of the Nuns from Minsk. At the time of the apostasy of Shimezko, there was a convent of Basilian nuns in the town, who employed themselves, under their rule, in the service of God, the instruction of children, and the relief of the poor. They were called the Daughters of the Holy Trinity, and the superior was the Reverend Mother Irina Makrina Mechisolanska, or Mother Makrina, as we shall more briefly call her. Their piety, goodness, and charity had endeared them to the country round, but Shimezko only hated them the more on account of their very virtue, and was determined to gain them over to the schism at any cost, for he well knew that to gain them would be to gain the whole town. The emperor had empowered him to deal with his refractory diocese as the interests of religion might require, a phrase, the true significance of which will appear from the sequel, and he had issued a decree putting at the disposal of the bishop military force if it should be required. Mother Makrina saw in this decree the death warrant of her community, either in this world or in the next, according as they should have courage to hold out for the love of Christ, or the weakness to yield, and she assembled her nuns and put before them the choice. They were not long in deciding, and when Shimezko summoned them to surrender their faith, they with one voice refused to obey. He was furious at their refusal, but said that the emperor would allow them 3 months to reconsider their determination. Mother Makrina proposed to the sisters that they should seek some safer asylum till the storm blew over. "And you," said they, "what will you do?" "I," she replied with angelic sweetness, but invincible determination, "I will die at my post, if I have not snatched from it by force." "Then let us hear no more of flight," they rejoined, "for our duty is to die at your side." So they all resolved to bear patiently the worst. 3 days had scarcely elapsed when Shimezko, accompanied by the civil governor of Minsk and an armed troop, broke into the convent at 5 o'clock in the morning, just as the nuns were leaving their cells to assemble in choir. The soldiers placed themselves at the doors of their rooms to prevent their going back into them, and then Shimezko harangued them as follows: "By His Majesty's orders, I give you 3 months, but I come at the 3rd day, for the evil might become worse. This is the last moment of liberty you will have. You may still choose between the riches you now possess, in addition to those which the magnanimity of the emperor is ready to add to them, if you join the Orthodox religion, and the hardship of Serbia, if you persist in your refusal." "Well, then, we choose the best," was the immediate answer, "namely, labor in Serbia rather than abandon Jesus Christ and his vicar." "Wait a while," he replied with a sneer, "and you will tell a different tale, when the knot has taken off the skin you were born in, and another skin has covered your bones. You will have been more tractable." After kneeling to take leave of Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, a consolation granted them by the civil governor, although refused by Shimezko, the nuns rose to depart. One only remained upon her knees. Her sisters proceeded to raise her, but she was dead. Her heart had broken at being driven away from her peaceful retirement, where she had served God for 30 years. On leaving the church, Mother Macrina threw herself at the governor's feet and entreated his permission to carry a crucifix away with them. Chimesco tried to prevent it, and had himself snatched from their hands a crucifix of silver and enriched with precious stones which contained the relics of St. Basil. But the governor allowed them to take one made of wood, and which they ordinarily used in the processions. Notwithstanding its weight, Mother Macrina carried it, resting it on her shoulder, from Minsk to Witebsk, and the more she suffered from the pressure, the more she loved the sacred wound on the left shoulder of Jesus, where the cross rested during his passage to Calvary. The nuns were changed two and two together. The first day they were driven 15 leagues, and most of the sisters sank again and again from exhaustion. Nevertheless, they were urged on, and in 7 days they arrived at Witebsk. There they were lodged in a convent of black nuns, as they were called. These were mostly widows of Russian soldiers and women of abandoned character. The house itself had belonged to a community of Basilian sisters who had been turned out to make way for these black nuns, and 14 of them were now found in irons by Mother Macrina. At their request, she adopted them as her own daughters, and from that time they shared all the sufferings of the nuns of Minsk. Their daily life was in this fashion. Before 6 o'clock in the morning they had to sweep the house, light the fires, and prepare the wood and water for the house. Then for 6 hours they had to break stones, and wheel them away in barrows, to which they were chained. From 12 to 1 they were allowed to rest, then hard labor again till dark, when they were required to attend the cattle and finish the household work. Their sufferings were greatly aggravated by the wanton cruelty of the black nuns, who purposely soiled the house and upset the water. The labors of the day over, they were shut up in their prison without having their irons taken off. It was cold and damp, and their only bed was a little straw, but to make up for all, they had their crucifix. At its feet they knelt at night, saying their office and praying for the conversion of the emperor, allowing themselves only 2 hours for sleep. Their food was so miserable that in summer they lived on herbs, and in the winter on what was given to the animals. But the black nuns grudged them even this, saying that they did not deserve even pig's meat. Nor was this all. Notwithstanding the severity of a Polish winter, they were allowed no fuel, so that their limbs were often frozen, and their wounds became more and more tender. Not the least part of their sufferings was the loss of Holy Communion, and they lamented the absence of their old director, Mikhailowitz, whom they had not seen since they left Minsk. When, therefore, one day he entered their cell, they ran to meet him with cries of joy, but they were immediately repulsed by the strange expression upon his countenance. They did not know that he had apostatized, and that he came not to administer the comfort of the sacraments, but as Chimesco's bidding, who had counted much of his influence to persuade them to desist from their opposition. They resisted his suggestion with the more horror that they had once regarded him with so much love, and he became, as we shall presently see, the most bitter of their persecutors. Chimesco was determined to put an end to the struggle by some decisive step. With this view, he ordered them to be scourged. Mikhailowitz, to whom the execution of the order was committed, increased the severity of the torture. Instead of 30 lashes, he made them number 50, and had the floggings repeated twice a week. On every Wednesday and Saturday all the sisters underwent this fearful infliction, and he stood by and watched for some sigh or groan in token of submission, but in vain. He heard naught but the prayer, "By thy cross and passion, Jesus, save my soul," which each sitter uttered at every lash. When he heard it not, it was because heaven had opened its gates to receive another martyr. The sisters prepared themselves for the scourging by meditation on the passion of Jesus Christ. They were compelled to witness each other's sufferings, but all the while the torture lasted, they thought they saw him scourged, and gathered strength rather than terror from the sight. Their greatest pain was that this scourging was carried out in the presence of the Russian clergy and other men. But even this grief too only united them more closely to the shame of Jesus. "What?" said one to Mother Macrina. "Did you not utter a single cry during all these horrible tortures?" "No," she replied, We were too much engaged in prayer. Only at first we prayed at the top of our voice, then, in a more subdued tone, and at length sometimes, she added with tears, not at all, and then we knew that the blows fell upon a corpse.
But did not nature sometimes rebel?
Yes, but with the help of God, we became used to everything. At first, the scourging was terrible to look forward to, but after a time, we all came up, each in her turn, to receive the lashes without being called. And yet pieces of flesh adhered to the scourges, and the torture continued for a whole month. The first who died from the scourging was Sister Columba. She was dragged from the torture to her labor and died immediately. Sister Susan expired under the lash, and Sister Situva the following night, with her eyes fixed on the crucifix and her head resting on the knees of Mother Macrina. Nor were these three the only martyrs. Sister Baptista was burnt alive by the black nuns, who, it is believed, were in a state of intoxication at the time, and Sister Nepomucian was killed by a blow on the head. Another, Sister Coletta, had her ribs broken and died in consequence. But still the constancy of the survivors remained unshaken, and Michalowicz, who had promised Szymanko that in a short time he would bring them all over, began to receive reproaches, not unmixed with threats, for his delay. Accordingly, he hit upon another plan. He divided the sisters into four different bands and shut them up separately in the hope that he should then have less difficulty with them. The place in which he confined Mother Macrina with eight of her nuns was a cave so damp that the whole place swarmed with worms, which crawled all over their person and into their mouths, ears, and noses, if for a moment they tried to compose themselves to sleep. They had only putrid vegetables given them to eat, but yet they were happier than they had been since they had left Minsk, and they composed a hymn which they sung continually, and of which we venture to offer a translation. My God, it is thy will, the burden sore thou dost ordain. For thee we suffer still to suffer more, our strength sustained. Torn from thy house by traitors, were so sweet the toil each day. Whom shall we ask for pity, at whose feet our sorrows lay? My God, look down upon our country, turn to joy our care, and schism from her people bid her spurn, 'tis all our prayer. Suffer, ye servants of the Lord, who staunch and true, still preserves, one day the triumph of the faith shall view, and dry his tears. Then shall we break our bands, then burst the chains that bind us fast. Thy blessed will be done, in heaven remains our crown at last. Michalowicz wrote to Szymanko that they were all ready to recant, and he promised to come immediately and receive their abjuration. In the meanwhile, he redoubled his efforts to make his words good, going round to all the dungeons with a paper for the poor inmates to sign, to which he declared that the others had already given to their adhesion.
He lies, said Mother Macrina. The wretch, he lies. No one has signed, of that I am certain. Give me the paper, and she tore it from his hands. Not a signature was there.
Pale with shame, Michalowicz clutched up a handful of filth, stuffed it in her mouth, and then slunk away. The next time they had found themselves all together with their wheelbarrows, they saluted each other with unspeakable joy, and fell on their knees to thank God for another victory, singing the Te Deum. Now, my children, said Mother Macrina cheerfully, we have a good rest. Let us try and work hard. To work, to work.
When Szymanko arrived to pay the sisters the promised visit, he addressed Macrina as Mother General, and brought with him a superb cross from the Emperor. But when he went on to say that he came at their invitation, they thought he was raving. At the same time, an involuntary feeling of alarm came over them, lest there should be a traitor among them. The sisters gazed silently on one another, but at last all eyes rested on Mother Macrina.
"Infamous creature!" she exclaimed. "What have you said? Who has invited you hither?"
"You yourself," he replied. At these words the sisters uttered a cry of distress, and most sullen silence succeeded, when Mother Macrina snatched from Szymanko's hand the pretended petition, opened it, and in the presence of the sisters, had at once recognized Michalowicz's writing. With indignation and contempt she flung the paper back in his face.
he attempted to brave out the forgery with another lie.
"Blood of a Polish dog!" he exclaimed. "Have you not all licked my feet, asking me a great favor to make in your name this humble supplication? And do you not fear God, who you offend by so barefaced a falsehood?" said the Holy Mother. "You know better than any one that we neither fear death nor martyrdom. How could we then beseech you to bring us your accomplice to receive our apostasy?"
"Then, Shimezko," she said, "that cross which you bring me from the emperor, suspend on your own breast, already so richly decorated. Once a thief hung upon a cross, now a cross hangs upon a thief. Go, never will you succeed in tempting God's servants."
No sooner had Shimezko left them than that she, with tears of joy, thanked God for the grace he had just given them. All the sisters pressed round Mother Macrina and gave that vent to their feelings which the presence of the apostate bishop had so long prevented. The following day, before he left, Shimezko caused them to be scourged under his windows, and Michalowicz revenged himself for his disgrace by fresh cruelties. The heavy copper pitcher of water which with they had to carry, Michalowicz now obliged them to bear at arm's length in order, as he said, that the Polish spirit might not get into the water. It was a great distance, particularly in the winter, when they had to take a long round to get at the river. If, exhausted with fatigue, they drew the pitchers near to them, the black nuns, who accompanied them everywhere, would snatch the pitcher from their hands and empty the contents on their head. They had, then, to begin over again. When Shimezko came again, it was so to reconcile a Unionite church to the Russo-Greek rite, and he was determined that Mother Macrina and her nuns should assist at the ceremony. This they firmly refused, and the apostate bishop accordingly gave orders that they should be brought in by force. Bleeding and bruised, they were dragged to the door of the church, where a great crowd had assembled, much to Shimezko's confusion, who would rather have been without so many witnesses. Mother Macrina, whose head was streaming with blood, caught up an axe which was lying by, and laying her head upon a block of wood, entreated Shimezko, as he had been their pastor, to now be their executioner.
"Cut off our heads and roll them into your church, for never shall our feet walk in. Here is the axe, here are our heads."
Shimezko only replied by knocking the axe out of her hand. It struck one of the sisters on the leg and inflicted a severe wound. He then struck Mother Macrina on the mouth and knocked out one of her teeth. She quietly picked it up and presented it to him, saying,
"This is the noblest action of our life, monster, and in remembrance of it, take this diamond and set it in your stony heart. Believe me, it will outshine all the jewels for which you have sold your soul."
Shimezko was so stung by these words that he went away in a fit of excess of passion and was obliged to be taken away. The sisters, with fresh blows, were sent back to their labors, singing as they went the Te Deum, in which many of the people joined. Shimezko consoled himself that night by a drinking bout with the black nuns, and the house resounded with convivial songs and cheers in honor of the emperor. Michalowicz joined in the debauchery. He, who had never known the taste of strong drink before his apostasy, was now seldom sober, and was doubtless sought to deaden the reproaches of his conscience. But the day of his retribution was at hand. The wretched man fell drunk into a pool of water and drowned.